J1.
Number 22A.
We go on then to point 12, which states that about the second record of creation. So then you can just turn again to the illustrative material on the second record of creation. And here what we see on the second record of creation, which is given in Genesis 2, that it just illustrates, as we've already seen, that the seven root errors arise from a misunderstanding of the seven root facts. And it also illustrates how the suggestion of mortal mind or misunderstanding evolves itself. Just as we went through in point 11, you can see there in the record on the second creation how we have mortal mind or a mist or ignorance, and this brings forward a matter or the subjective state of mortal mind and material senses, etc. It just then illustrates how mortal mind evolves itself. Now we go on then to point 13, and we see here it states that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, the seven root facts, and it will talk about their seven counterfeits or the seven root errors. Now we see that these seven root errors must be handled intelligently and scientifically. And we must be able to always analyze an error from the standpoint of the divine fact. And so in order to do this, we know that there must be a study then of the synonymous terms, and that this study of the seven synonymous terms must always include a study of the counterfeits of those terms. So we will always know just which error counterfeits the fact. So we know then that mind always handles its counterfeit belief of mind's many or hypnotism, mesmerism, and etc. Now as we go on to point 14, we have the purpose of evil. And one talks an awful lot about evil and just what evil is, so I thought that I'd just look up the dictionary definition from Webster, and we could just go over it together. Actually, the root meaning of evil means to fail or to fall. It means to be unjust or injurious. It means to defraud or to decline. So Webster says that having bad qualities of a natural kind or mischievous is evil. Or having bad qualities of a moral kind, such as being wicked, is evil. And Webster says that a natural evil, then, is anything that produces pain, distress, or loss. And that a moral evil, Webster says, is any deviation of a moral agent from the rules of conduct prescribed to him by God or by legitimate human authority. A moral evil also includes all wickedness, crimes, or any violations of law and rights. A moral evil stands for depravity. So we can say that someone who is suffering from a first-degree consciousness of depravity is called an evil doer. And the ultimate purpose of a evil or first-degree consciousness is to destroy the third-degree or Christ consciousness. And we can say, why? Well, it's because the third-degree or Christ consciousness will ultimately destroy all evil. Now we can say, what are the methods of a first-degree evil consciousness? And we then now come to 14A. And we see that a method of an evil consciousness is the tendency of evil to assume new forms. And this is interesting, because evil does not always present itself in the same form. An evil doer will always present new forms of evil in order to fool those who are untrained in analyzing the ways of evil. And we know that with each age and with each person that what is called evil or wrongdoing often appears in new forms in order to fool those who finally caught on to the old forms of evil. Then evil goes in and thinks of new ways to fool somebody who is untrained in analyzing evil. And in point B, we see that evil wants us to believe that it is a reality. And we know this is true, that someone suffering from a first degree or evil consciousness wants us and would like to have us believe that evil is reality. And they would more than ever like us to believe that evil is superior to good. Then in point C, we see that evil wants to be left alone. Somebody with a evil first-degree consciousness wants to be left alone, undisturbed. And they'll say, "What have I to do with you? Leave me alone." But we know that when evil is left alone, that it just grows, and that a person will suffer then all the effects of lack and death and sickness and fear and hate and etc., if one leaves evil alone. So the answer is, we just cannot leave evil alone. And at all times we must go in with truth and strongly uproot evil or error. So we say that we must always go after error, because we're doing somebody one of the biggest favors if we can jar them out of error. So if somebody says, "Go away, leave me alone, I have nothing to do with you, don't bother me, my life has nothing to do with you, let me do as I want," don't listen to them. Because you see, error left alone will just grow, and they're going to suffer more effects from that error if you leave them alone. So the most kindest thing to do is to jar them out of their error. So don't let anybody fool us into being apathetic about their condition. We see that a Christ consciousness always destroys error. Jesus wasn't always nice and kind and benevolent. We read in the Bible where he actually went in and overturned the money tables. Well, now the money changers would think, that was a very unchristly act of Jesus to do, to come in and overturn the tables. Well, the Christ consciousness is always talking about being kind and nice and loving. Well, Christ should be kind and nice and loving at all times. Well, this is a lie. The Christ, that isn't the attitude of the Christ. The Christ at all times comes in and destroys error wherever it can see it. So Jesus came in and threw the tables over. That was being the Christ at its highest point. He was destroying error. He wasn't apathetic at any time. So we go on then to point D, and we see that evil wants then to hide itself. So in order to be left alone, the evildoer will run off and hide himself or herself and try to operate in secrecy. Because in secrecy and in hiding, the evildoer can make plans and just await the opportunity to spring into action. So we say, don't let evil hide itself. Get all error out in the open. Don't ignore it. I think that if people in relationships with one another, if we know that one person is doing something that is wrong, instead of ignoring it and turning our back to it, we should bring it out in the open. I think today is a day where everybody brings out the skeletons out of the closet. I think the young people more than ever just say things as they are. They bring out all the air in the open and dangle it in front of the person's face and say, "Look, this is what you're doing wrong, and I don't like it." This is good because it keeps a person from trying to hide himself, trying to operate in secrecy, you see. Just, and if he does, the error will just grow. So the thing is, don't let it happen. Bring it out into the open. As Mrs. Eddy said, error, when found out, is two-thirds destroyed, and the last third pierces itself. Now we go on to point E, and we see that evil wants to fool us. Again, as we just saw, that the evildoer will try to fool us into believing that evil is real good. They'll want to fool us into believing that the mortal mind, matter bodies, the personal egos, is a good life, that that's the real good life, and it's the best type of life we can possibly have. But we say that we won't believe it, because we know regardless that the effects of error are always ultimately death, sickness, or fear. And we know so often that we are trying to be fooled into believing that the world's beliefs are our own beliefs. And we must see that the world's beliefs are not our own personal beliefs, that they're impersonal with us. Therefore, we do not have to accept such world beliefs as loose morality, free love, and etc., thinking that these beliefs are our beliefs. They're not. And so we know that when any false beliefs come to us, they come just as suggestions, and that we must at all times reject these false beliefs and let our Christ consciousness annihilate all evil. We go on to then point F. And we see that evil wants us to believe in Christian Science and not to understand it. And why? It's because that belief in anything weakens the intellect. And we know that it's only a scientific understanding that enables us to analyze, uncover, and annihilate the waves of evil. And then in point G, we see that evil wants to destroy error with error. Evildoers would like to see us use the atom bomb to destroy all our so-called political enemies. But we see that the atom bomb is just a greater and bigger error than the so-called political enemies that we have. And using an atom bomb just perpetuates war. So we can see that an error is not destroyed by another error because it only perpetuates it. We see that a lie doesn't get rid of a lie. Lying only perpetuates lies. Therefore, it usually takes a greater lie to overcome a lesser lie, and it just leaves our situation in a worse condition. So one must always destroy error with truth alone. Then we go on to point H, and we see that evil's ultimate purpose is to destroy man and Christian Science. What this means is that the ultimate purpose of a first degree evil consciousness is to destroy the third degree or Christ consciousness or man or Christ Science or Christian Science. And we say why? Well, as we just know, that then a Christ consciousness or Christian Science will ultimately destroy all evil. Now we go on to point 15. And this is one of the biggest points that we have. And that is the methods of handling the seven root errors. It's interesting here to read in Deuteronomy 28:7. It says this, that the Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way and flee before thee seven ways. So you see, the enemy is what? It's the one enemy is mortal mind or misunderstanding. The one enemy or mortal mind comes out in front of us, and it flees in seven ways. It flees in the seven root errors. So we must know that we have to handle these seven root errors. And so we come to point 15A, and that is the importance of handling the seven root errors at once. And as we have seen, that if we leave error alone, it will just evolve and become more aggressive and difficult to deal with. So we say, well, then, just what are the methods of handling error? Now, there are various methods of handling error, and we must look at a few key methods. And therefore, we come to point 15B, and we come to that method of argumentation. Now, the method of argumentation in handling error is a method of affirmation and denial. This method of argumentation is not the method of science. And we want to underline the fact that argumentation is not the method of science. Argumentation goes out from the first and second degree. It goes out from imperfection. It goes out from the human standard of right and wrong. Argumentation is based on human opinions and beliefs, and it demonstrates what we think should be demonstrated. The method of argumentation is a method of human mind healing, of mental thought healing, or thought transference, or what we call benevolent mesmerism. Its treatment is quite a burden and is very routine. But we look at this method of argumentation, or this method of affirmation and denial. And this is the method, and I'll just briefly summarize the method of argumentation. First, what happens is one has the affirmation about God. One first affirms God. And one will say that God can never sin nor be sick. Therefore, God created neither sin, sickness, nor death. Then after the affirmation about God, one makes a denial about man in general and says because God never created sin, sickness, nor death, then consequently man can neither sin, be sick, nor die. And therefore we deny that sin, disease, and death can be a cause or an effect. Then in this method, one goes on and makes a denial about the specific problem. And in this case, the name of the disease is denied. The disease itself is denied. All symptoms of the disease are argued away. And that we deny that the disease has a cause. We deny that the disease has power, that the disease is real, that the disease is dangerous, and we deny that it is contagious or has any after effects. Then we make an affirmation about the specific patient, and we affirm the healthy state of the patient. Then we go on and make a denial of all the opposing arguments of the senses. We deny that matter has sensation. We deny that matter can suffer or be inflamed or infected. Then we make an affirmation of the treatment that we have just given. We affirm that the treatment that we have just given is effective and it will not be in vain. We affirm that the treatment cannot be reversed in its effects and that the patient can only be blessed by the treatment and not hurt by it. We affirm that there will be no relapse. We affirm that the treatment includes all the necessary arguments needed for its success. We affirm that the patient knows that he is well. You see, affirmation and denial goes on and on and on in this particular way. There is audible argumentation where the affirmation and denials are said out loud, and there is silent argumentation where the affirmation and denials are said silently to oneself. Now let us go on to another method of handling error, and that is the method of reversal. And now may I say again that this method of reversal is not the method of science. And I underline that it also is not the method of science. The method of reversal goes out from the first degree. It goes out from imperfection to reach perfection. The method of reversal relies on inductive reasoning, reasoning from error by reversal to reach truth. The method of reversal is a step higher than argumentation. And we say, why? Well, argumentation was actually healing by good human thoughts, whereas the method of reversal is healing by the ideas of God. And also the method of argumentation is saying that there is no error. And the method of reversal is saying that error is the counterfeit of truth. Now, reversal's main standpoint are on these facts: that God is divine principle, that principles' ideas are the reality, and that material beliefs are but counterfeits of ideas, and that material beliefs by reversal lead to divine ideas. So the main standpoint, as I just mentioned, of the method of reversal then is going out from matter and by reversal arriving at the idea. Now, an example of this method of reversal in treatment would be this. One would say about a material heart, if one was having heart problems, the method would be, well, they'd say a material heart by reversal hints to a spiritual heart. So what happens here is that we have reversed material for spiritual, but we have left heart. So our method here would declare that I have a perfect spiritual heart. Or we can go on, and the method would be this, that a material heart by reversal hints to the spiritual idea of heart. And here we have just reversed material for spiritual idea, but we've still left heart. Or we can go on with this method of reversal, and it also includes that a material heart by reversal hints to the spiritual idea of love. Now here we see that the material heart is no longer a counterfeit of a spiritual heart, or a material heart is no longer a counterfeit of a spiritual idea of heart. Heart is dropped altogether now, and we see that material heart hints to the idea of love. Or one could say that a material arm hints to the idea of power. What happens with this method of reversal is that it causes all sorts of unscientific guesswork to occur. It's very unscientific, and it's based mainly on guesswork. So let us go on to point 15E, and we come to scientific analysis as a method of handling error. So we say, what then is the method of science? Well, the method of science is to go out from the third degree of understanding, to go out from the divine system of reference, and to use the method of deductive reasoning, and reasoning from principle to idea. See, it is not the inductive reasoning of reversal, of reasoning from matter by reversal to idea. In science, we reason from principle to idea. Mrs. Eddy says that the divine principle of the universe must interpret the universe. She's saying go out from principle and let it interpret the universe. Or she will say that reasoning from cause to effect in the science of mind. We begin with mind, which must be understood through the idea which expresses it and cannot be learned from its opposite matter. You see, mind cannot be understood by reasoning inductively from matter. We must begin with mind and reason deductively from mind. And therefore we see then that mind can only be understood through the idea which expresses it. Therefore we see the necessity for our synonym study, which was based on science and health. We must determine what the ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are. And those ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love will tell us what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love is. Now, then, we say the scientific method of healing we have already seen together and we have reviewed quite thoroughly. And that is when we reviewed in detail the scientific law of the Christ. And remember that we mentioned that that is the scientific method of healing. That method was to put all the seven root errors behind us. Why? Because we know that they are just the effect of mortal mind. And we know that the only disease is mortal mind, or the misunderstanding of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And we know that the only medicine is the divine mind, or understanding mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So we know the disease, and we know the medicine. And what is the remedy? Well, the remedy then is to turn to the Word of God, to understand what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love is. And then we submit ourselves to the Word of God. We claim mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love as our true identity. And then we see that our divine understanding acts as a saving power. Those seven root facts then analyze by the law of opposite the seven root errors. They uncover the truth, and then they annihilate those seven root errors, because those seven root errors become self-evident lies. Now we go on to point 15E, and we see the scientific statement of being. Well, we know that the scientific statement of being appears in Science and Health on page 468. The scientific statement of being illustrates the scientific method of handling error. In other words, it states that there is reasoning from the allness of the infinite mind and understanding the nothingness of matter.